are still, and we're very excited for you, and we're excited for the iHeart Talk Radio Network and the legacy it will provide with a very unique topic that is being done in about 15 minutes' time. I don't think you've ever heard anything like it. It'll be executed by yours truly, Jim Richards. That reminds me of the old Tampa Bay Buccaneer coach. He was asked after a game, how did you feel about your team's execution? And he said, I'd be all for it, because they didn't play very well. Who knows? In a half an hour, maybe people will be in favor of my execution. When the topic is, anonymously text us at 71010. We don't know who the hell you are. And I mean this in a good way. We don't care. But tell us your deepest, darkest secret, and we will rate it from 0 to 10. And we'll tell you our secrets. I already have, as pathetic as mine was. Actually, I think it's a pretty good secret. I'll share that again in about 15 minutes' time. Luckily for you guys, I start with hilarious jokes every hour. We don't have time for any more of the hilarious jokes. Tune in an hour from now when hopefully we'll have more time. I'm just really excited about the secret topic is all I'm... The secret! In about 15 minutes' time here on the iHeart Talk Radio Network.
News Talk Tonight is on with your host, Jim Richards, on the iHeart Radio Talk Network.
In Toronto, about a year ago, people were very upset that certain homeless encampments were taken out of parks, where it was security guards hired by the city of Toronto and a police force, and the optics looked awful, and maybe are awful, of police going in and ripping the most vulnerable out of the only place that they call home. People were wondering, what kind of society do you want to live in? There were plenty of people who were, paid, $2 million or $1.5 million for their home, with stories of people from that park coming and urinating on their lawn and, going through their backyard and any number of different things. And they were calling for some change. The answer was, these people who were unhoused got ripped out of their home, encampment, whatever you want to call it. A new precedent-setting ruling happened in Ontario, in Waterloo, where the Superior Court of Ontario, a precedent-setting decision, rules encampment clearing would violate charter rights. Gavin Tai is a contributor. He is a criminal lawyer to the iHeart Talk Radio Network. He was on earlier today.
A lengthy decision. It said that it was not really a choice. It was, you cannot impose rules that cannot be followed due to addictions. So addiction is drug use is not a choice, according to this ruling, and that therefore it is constitutionally protected that you have to have what are referred to as accessible shelter space, which means accessible to people, I suppose, who need to do drugs. Now, that really raises a whole series, in my view, of societal issues and questions that we have to ask ourselves. And, is that something that the right to do illegal drugs, is that a constitutionally protected right? I think a lot of people would probably say no.
The person who argued this decision might want to take umbrage with that and how Gavin Tai saw this ruling. Shannon Down is the executive director of Waterloo Region Community Legal Services. This was your fight. What did you think of Gavin's characterization there, Shannon?
Saying that there's a constitutionally protected right to do drugs. I think what the court instead was saying was that if you're going to evict people from an encampment and you don't have shelter beds that are accessible to them for a variety of reasons, that is an infringement of their Section 7 rights, which is the right to life, liberty, and security of the person. So I'm not sure it really turned on the issue of drug use, although the judge did reference drug use as being a potential reason why someone, you know, might not be able to access a particular shelter bed.
The way you described it, I wonder if in a place like Toronto would argue that they did have shelter beds, and a lot of people who are unhoused have been robbed or abused in these shelters and don't want to be in them, but you could argue that there's a place for them to go. Would that have still been viewed the same way by the court that ruled this way?
I mean, if there were actually enough spaces and those spaces were accessible and low barrier enough, that might have satisfied the court, but that wasn't the evidence in our case. So in Waterloo Region in 2021, they did a point in time count. And at that time, the number of homeless people was identified as being approximately 1,100 people. The region of Waterloo has, give or take, you know, about 500 beds in their shelter system.
Yep.
So there was, you know, there's a big disconnect between the number of people who are living unhoused and the number of shelter beds that were available. And that doesn't even get into the accessibility issue, just by sheer numbers.
When you say accessibility, do you mean available ability to get to these places, or do you mean for people who are disabled?
Both. You know, one of the things with shelter beds and numbers is that it's sometimes a bit misleading when a municipality says, like, we have X number of beds, because most shelters cater to a specific population. So you might have a shelter that's specifically men only or yeah. women only, or, you know, for different groups. So if you have someone who, or youth only shelter. So for example, in the region of Waterloo, if there was 20 beds available tonight, but they're all in the youth system, that doesn't help me if I'm over 25, or if there's a bed available in the male only shelter, it doesn't help me if I'm a woman. So,
yeah.
You know, it's not just strictly the numbers, because obviously, you know, each shelter caters to a specific population. So if you have empty beds in certain places, it might not meet the needs of the people who are actually seeking the space.
And if you're unhoused in, say, Toronto, which covers a long part of real estate in one end of the city, and somebody tries to argue, well, you know, you might be in Etobicoke, but there are beds in Scarborough, I'm guessing that's what you're talking about.
Yeah, that can be an issue. I mean, that's also the issue here. So, for example, you know, Waterloo Region is a big place. We have beds available in Cambridge. That's a big hike for someone to get there by bus or by taxi. They don't know for sure until they get there whether there's going to be a bed available for them. We do have a system called First Connect that people can call. But if you don't have a phone, you're just going to show up and see if there's a bed available. So it's a leap of faith to just try and, you know, take the hike across city, you know, across the region, across the city, wherever you are, to try and line up and see if there's an available bed.
So it's been called.
Most of these clients don't have phones, so
yeah.
You know, it's a big issue.
So it's been called precedent setting, but I'm guessing that might not necessarily be true, given one community's story might be different from another community's story. That part of the question too is the first part of the question. Second part of the question is, where do you hope this decision, other than not ripping people out of where they call home, where do you hope it leads a conversation?
Right. So in terms of it being precedent setting, I think that the principles that the court elaborated on and the analysis applies no matter where it is in the province or even across Canada, because we're talking about charter protected rights, and the idea that if you're going to evict someone from an encampment and you don't have a bed for them, you know, you're really endangering them. You're creating a situation where they're at increased risk of a whole bunch of types of harms. So that principle, I think, would apply. You know, the facts of any particular case will have a bearing on the outcome, but I think those principles have wide applications.
Yeah.
In terms of where this goes, I mean, you know, I guess our hope is that municipalities will sort of turn their focus from enforcement and eviction to support and outreach, and looking at the bigger picture, which is that we're in a housing crisis across the province.
Yep.
People just can't, you know, more and more people are unable to afford rent. We don't have enough subsidized housing, and market rent is just extremely unaffordable for anyone who's on low income or social assistance.
Shannon, I appreciate your time. Sorry, we're out of time. Thank you very much for the conversation.
Thank you very much.
Shannon Down is the executive director of the Waterloo Region Community Legal Services, and she's the one who fought for this. Send us your secrets at 71010. We'll rate them next.
This is News Talk Tonight Jim Richards on the iHeartRadio Talk Network.
Everybody was saying bad things about Bobby Hull today, but did you guys know he scored 50 goals? I mean, how could there be, allegations of domestic abuse? But 50 goals? What, he was an anti-Semite? He was racist? My point being, folks, a lot of people, I think, are rightfully bringing this stuff up. But I don't know why when other people are dead, it's like, okay, Michael Jackson died. And when Michael Jackson died, I was just like, everybody was eulogizing him. But I guarantee you most of those celebrities the day before wouldn't have been caught dead in a picture if they were at the same event and they were like, hey, Michael Jackson wants to take a picture with you for what was going on in the news with Michael Jackson at that time. Most of those people wouldn't have. Nobody wants to talk about bad things that would happen on a Pope's reign when they pass away, and things when the Queen passed away. Nobody wanted to talk about colonization. It was all, now maybe you think those are different things, but we'll talk about Bobby Hull in a bit. But first, ladies and gentlemen, it's time for a segment that we're calling Your Secrets. It's kind of confessions. Text us your secrets, and we will grade them from 1 to 10. All right. Two guys that I work with are very capable at their job, love them a lot, but when it comes to sharing secrets, apparently cowards, I tell you. I just share, I don't know if I want to say it on the air. They can't be worse than me saying that I stole money from my mom and went to strip joints when I was earlier. Or how about this one? I'm not proud to say that about 15 years ago, twice in my life, I've been the other man. Like, people were in a committed relationship and I was seeing the woman on the side. And then I ended it. But that's terrible. Cheating. You're enabling the cheating. What a scumbag. What a terrible person you are, Richards. So here are our texts from, unless one of you cowards want to say something, but here are our texts. Sorry for being so harsh against my beloved colleagues, listeners. Mom had a pool party when I was 16, went through the ladies' purses in the change room, found awesome cash, only took some from each person. Never heard a word, my only criminal act. I love that guy. Or woman. That is great. Now, they don't say whether or not they went to strip joint. I stole money from my mom and went to a strip joint. I'm going to say, what are you grading my secret out of 10? What are you grading it? Like an 8, a 9, a 7? How good is mine?
I think that's a 7. A 7.
A 7 stealing money from your mom and going into a strip joint?
Oh, that's an 8. I'm talking about the other one.
I'm going to give this guy an 8 or woman an 8. Andrew?
Yes, I would agree with that. Maybe an 8.5.
Next text message we received from someone, because I don't want to run out of time here. My wife and I are swingers. We go to church every Sunday. Our church friends and family members don't know. I love that. Oh, man. I'm going to say that's a 7 as a secret. No? Good 7?
Yeah. So I'm going for a 6 because there's absolutely nothing wrong with that. All the power to you if you're swingers. But possibly an 8 if that priest ever finds out.
Okay.
Yeah, I would agree, and I would tell this person's family to look out for a pineapple in their house.
I don't know what that means. Is that a swinger sign? Oh, Andrew's a swinger. And apparently knows about drug measurements, as we learned last hour. I said, I don't know about drug measurements. And Andrew looked at me like I was lying to the people. I don't. I'm assuming 2.5 is a lot. It's a fair amount. I have no idea. Like if you put 2.7 grams of cocaine in front of me, I would not know that. Anyway, let's continue. I have what is known as object sexuality, being sexually attracted to anime t-shirts. Not even the LGBTQ people support this. I did not know that. That's a good secret. I don't know. If you were attracted to anime characters, is that something that you wouldn't be embarrassed to bring up? I'm going to say it's a 6. Everybody agrees it's a what?
Yeah, 5.
Okay. Dated 2 men at the same time in the same apartment building, 10 floors apart. That's a good one. I'm going to give that a 8.
Yeah, I'm just checking the number to see if that's my ex texting in. But I would give that a 7.
No. If you're just joining us, folks, we have asked people to text us in their deepest, darkest secrets, and we would rate them. Once in my life, I stole a car from a used car lot. I drove it off the lot with the salesman's blessing about 35 years ago. I was drunk and needed a ride home about 80 kilometers one late afternoon. Washed the price off the windshield, abandoned it with the keys in an apartment building parking lot, never told anyone. Man, that is fantastic. I'm going to give that a 10. That is a 10.
I'm going to go with a 9 on that one. That was pretty awesome.
I would give that a 10.5, maybe.
10.5. When I tell my wife I'm going out to shop to fix my snowmobile or car, I'm actually just drinking beer and listening to music. Sometimes a guy needs a little alone time. I love that one a lot. That's a solid 7. I don't mean to disparage that one, but it's I feel like a lot of guys do that. There was actually a study that came out today that said that like 80% of guys spend more than a half an hour in the washroom just to escape the family. So that is a solid 8. I've been seeing the same women for 30 years. My family still thinks I'm gay. Wow. That's interesting. I'm going to say that's an 8.
Yeah, that's a 9, because if your family still thinks you're gay, maybe there's something to it.
My deepest, darkest secret, I used to be a Leaf fan, even though I'm an Ottawa boy, okay? Admitting you're a Leaf fan, I think that's a 10. Even though that's something I think that Andrew would do.
I'm a big Leaf fan, yes.
Yeah, okay. That was out loud, Andrew. I guess I'm a Leaf fan if they ever get by the first round of the playoffs, but until then, I have no idea who the hell's on that team. I would snack on the Eucharist wafer as an altar boy at the church before they were blessed, of course, at Mass, because I was so hungry. The rice wafers came delivered in big bags and were very tasty. Holy mackerel. I used to be an altar boy, too. I did not do that. That's a great one. I'm going to say that is a 10.
That's a 10.
Does that need to be described to anybody who's not Catholic? No?
I kind of put it together, but yeah, I would give that a 7.
Those are great. Have any secrets come in the last 5 minutes that you could read us quickly, Tony?
Somebody texted in saying they got fellatio from 2 different teachers during a lunch break.
I'm not sure if I was you, if I would word that in a different way. I'm pretty sure I would have. But thank you. That would be a 10, I think, or if not an 11 out of 10. And also wash your mouth out with soap, Tony, and maybe do a little editing in your head. I don't know.
Use the real term for it.
No, maybe it is. I just feel gross now. I just feel gross. Next thing you know, Andrew's going to play that boing sound effect again. And were going to sound like some sort of frat morning show DJ antics and hijinks and all that. Is it okay to speak ill of the dead? In this case, we remember, at least we're remembering, the good and bad of Bobby Hall next on the iHeartTalk Radio Network.
This is the iHeartRadio Talk Network, and News Talk Tonight continues with Jim Richards.
All right, before we get into remembering perhaps one of the greatest hockey players of all time, we'll ask our expert who works at the Hockey Hall of Fame. So who better to ask in a couple of seconds? We were just doing a segment. If you're just joining us, we asked people to anonymously text us their biggest secret, and we would judge it or grade it out of 10. You had one more, Tony, that you wanted to give us?
Yes, sir. It says, I can't believe I'm about to admit this, but I'm a huge Jim Richards fan. God help me.
Oh, boy. That's probably one of the toughest ones to admit ever. Thank you for all
that. That's a 10.
11 out of 10.
Oh, unbelievable. Okay, guys. Thank you very much. The kind of encouragement that I always look for from my colleagues.
That's it, Bobby Hull, 500 goals.
And the crowd goes wild here in Chicago. Bobby Hull has broken the all-time scoring record of 51 goals in a single season.
A great hockey career, first to score 50-plus goals in an NHL season. 303 goals, 335 assists in 411 games in the WHA. 1976 Canada Cup winner and inducted into the Hockey Hall of Fame in 1983. But I saw one headline today that said Bobby Hall dead at 84. Good riddance. That's because his legacy is a little complicated, but hockey, maybe not so much, but in life, I think probably a yes. We're joined right now from the Hockey Hall of Fame, who is the editorial and education manager. Kevin Shea joins us. Kevin, thank you very much for your time.
Hey, thanks for calling me up, Jim. This is great.
I really appreciate the accomplishments on the ice, and I hate to start this way, but is it fair, do you think, in remembering Bobby Hall to remember the fact that I would say an anti-Semite, given some of the things that he had said, racist allegedly, or let's just put the alleged on, abusive in two out of his three marriages. Should those things be talked about today?
Well, they have to be remembered. We can't ignore them by any means, but I think we have to think about the legacy that he left on the ice, and it was extraordinary. There were two Bobby Hulls. Candidly, it was the one on the ice was the great-looking, charismatic, extraordinary hockey player who wouldn't hesitate to sign autographs for hours on end just to make sure that everybody got one. What happened behind closed doors, which most of us didn't know at the time, but it slowly seeped out, was a whole different matter, and the kindness wasn't reciprocated there either. And so it's important for us to realize that our heroes sometimes have clay feet, and that such was the case with Bobby Hull.
I want to get into the hockey stuff in a second, but I guess there's a difference in eras in terms of how the magnifying glass is really on players in any sport these days. And maybe, and I'm saying maybe, there was a different time when the reporters were maybe a little more buddy-buddy with some of the players?
Oh, no doubt about it, Jim. I mean, even earlier, probably earlier than Hull's era, but they were actually paid by the team, so they were not going to write anything bad about the teams. And I'm talking about the 1930s and 40s at this point. But they certainly were traveling with the team. They were taken into confidence by management, by players alike. They were certainly going to be objective to some degree, but they were certainly going to cover things that they didn't need to report on. Whole different matter now. Social media has certainly changed that. I think There are a whole lot of things that have gone on since, but it was a whole different time at that point, and fans had a lot of access. Now they don't get any access or very limited access at all, and there may be a reason for that as well, just to keep private lives a little bit more private.
Do you want to talk a little bit, first of all, because I think there's like three or four parts of the career that we would maybe want to talk about, but first, as a Chicago Blackhawk?
Yeah, 15 seasons in Chicago, and just... even before that, going back, the Blackhawks signed him as a 14-year-old to be part of their organization.
Wow.
So just beyond belief at that point. It was obvious at that time that he was going to be a superb hockey player. Ended up going to play for the St. Catharines Blackhawks, which was the farm team, or the sponsored junior team of the Chicago Blackhawks at the time, and was a star there, played with many of his future teammates, including Stan Mikita. Goes to the Chicago Blackhawks, 1957-58, and had a good season, really good season. Was runner-up for the Calder Trophy as the top rookie of the year, came second to Frank Mahovlich of the Toronto Maple Leafs. But it was all upwards and onwards from there. Couple years later, I guess 59-60, if I recall correctly, he led the league in scoring with 39 goals, which was a huge number at that time, but eclipsed just the year after that. A couple years after that, when he scored 50 goals, the third person to score 50 in NHL after Maurice Richard,
yeah,
and Boom Boom Geoffrion, and he went on to score 50 or more goals five times, just unprecedented. Won the Stanley Cup in 1961. They should have probably won a whole lot more with Glenn Hall in net, Stan Mikita, Bobby Hall, Pierre Palat, etc., but they didn't.
And can you tell me the state of the league and the players, the relationship and the woo of the WHA, where he went on to a second career?
Sure. So by the late 1960s, things were starting to change a little bit. And by 1972, the World Hockey Association was formed, which was a league to rival the National Hockey League. And they wanted to lure some marquee players over there just to help launch the league. And one of the ones that they targeted was Bobby Hull. Others were Derek Sanderson, Jerry Cheevers, some of the big names of the time, and some who had that marquee image that they had as well, not just on the ice, but off the ice. But Bobby Hull was lured over in the same way as many of them were, just nobody really knew what to expect there. And I think Bobby Hull made a comment, something along the lines of, sure, I'll talk to them, but I wouldn't go over there for $1 million. Well, sure enough, they walked out the big check with $1 million on it, and Bobby Hull all of a sudden couldn't say no, and he became a Winnipeg Jet. So after 15 years in Chicago, spent 7 years in Winnipeg, where he stars there. They win the championship, which was called the Avco World Cup, and they won it three times while he was there. And he was just as explosive in the World Hockey Association as he was in the National Hockey League.
But that decision meant that he couldn't be a part of maybe one of the biggest moments in Canadian history, the 72 Summit Series, correct?
No, without question. And that was a big, big bone of contention, because there were different players who they thought should have been on the team. And one of them certainly was Bobby Hull. He would have been on the team had he stayed in the National Hockey League, but it was a way for Clarence Campbell, the NHL president, to punish him for jumping to this rival league at the time. So he wasn't able to join. Having said that, the third game of the series was played in Chicago, and there was Bobby sitting in the stands watching, with more people clamoring around him to get his autograph while the game was going on,
yeah,
just to kind of put it in people's faces at that time as well.
Is his greatest legacy his son?
Well, his own career would be his legacy,
yeah,
for sure. But his sons, certainly, they had a different relationship as well. But they're two, both in the Hockey Hall of Fame now. They've patched up differences through the years, and both just dynamic hockey players. Both kind of cut from the same cloth. They both had that wicked shot. Weren't necessarily that familiar with their defensive end, but boy, oh boy, they sure knew the offensive side of things.
Great stuff. Kevin, thank you very much for your time. I really appreciate it.
Much appreciated your calling me. Thanks, Jim.
Kevin Shea, who is the editorial and education manager of the Hockey Hall of Fame. So I do think that it's important to have that conversation with some of those things that are, you know, really serious things to consider. I think you'd have a real tough time in this day and age saying some of those things that were definitely anti-Semitic, racist, and having two of your three wives accuse you of domestic violence. Straight ahead, like we do every Monday, we meet one of our contributors to the iHeart Talk Radio Network, and we ask them on Twitter to explain their likes. Our friend Bob Reed is next here on News Talk Tonight.
It's News Talk Tonight on the iHeartRadio Talk Network. Here's your host, Jim Richards.
Come on. The space truckin', mental health. That with Mike Williams of Much Music fame coming up in about 15 minutes time. It's a segment that we talk about mental health. And from time to time, we've been talking to not necessarily counselors or therapists, but just people about their life and how they deal with certain stressful situations, anxiety, et cetera, et cetera. Michael Williams will be joining us coming up in about 15 minutes time. And then a man who lost his football pool and had to stay in a Denny's for 24 hours. How the hell did you manage that? But first, it's time for Explain Your Likes. The background of Explain Your Likes comes from me being called out one time when I supported a woman who left her job to follow her dream. She was a guest on this show. Her dream was to start her own OnlyFans page. And I had liked a picture that she posted because she was a guest on the show. And then all sorts of people come to me and they say, you do know that people can see what you like. And I was like, of course I do. And I'm not making any apology for supporting somebody who needs a lot of support. She had very large breasts, but I supported somebody who needed support in a time that she needed support. I was there for her with a like. So I explained my likes, and now we're asking other contributors to the iHeartRadio Network to explain their likes. And today, it is Bob Reed, who is a contributor to the iHeartTalk Radio Network, and he was the host of the afternoon show in Toronto today. Bob Reed, thank you for your time.
Always a pleasure, Jim Richards.
All right. I like your likes today. Your first like is, I think, always a fun Twitter follow. Mandy Patinkin, explain your like.
Well, if you like Mandy Patinkin, the fantastic actor, tremendous singer and stage performer, you will love his Twitter feed. And one of the things I love about Twitter is being able to follow celebrities who are completely unguarded in what they put out. There's no BS around them. They're not consulting with anybody. They just share stuff that they like. So I have seen Mandy Patinkin live in concert several times. He's a fantastic performer that way. I loved Criminal Minds, the TV series that he was on, and of course your producer Tony was only a couple of years ago realized that yes, Mandy Patinkin's also the guy from Princess Bride.
He just remembered.
You'll kill my father. Prepare to die. That is him.
I love the, first of all, I love his Twitter feed too, but he also includes his wife and they make some fun videos that they circulate from time to time.
Yes. Yes, they do. And the one example I sent of one of his things that really made me laugh is he shared something from posted by somebody else that said scientists at Stanford University have reconstructed this 3D model, and there's a picture of how Joseph, the husband of Mary, the mother of Jesus Christ, might have looked. And then you see the picture, and It's Andre the Giant. It's a clay sculpture of Andre the Giant,
who was in Princess Bride, for people who don't know. Yeah.
Right. And Mandy retweets it with, anybody want a peanut?
Oh, that's funny. That's great. Your second like for Explain Your Likes is Alan Alda's Twitter feed. Why Alan Alda's Twitter feed?
Because I just plain love Alan Alda. Hawkeye Pierce was my role model when I was growing up watching MASH when it was on TV the first time around. And he just puts out some really, really, really nice stuff, usually, not surprising, coming from Alan Alda. And one of my favorites in recent times is a picture of him and Mike Farrell, BJ Honeycutt.
Yeah.
Toast, and they both got a glass of red wine in their hands, and it's the two of them toasting the 50th anniversary of the debut of MASH. So not only is that a lovely moment, but if you look at their faces, they look shockingly like the two old guys up in the box in the Muppet Theater.
Your third like, it's not necessarily from Twitter. I just, if people are listening right now, I just clicked on it. That was the audio because I clicked on the YouTube link. Explain your like, Rick Beato.
Rick Beato is a musicologist type, and he's a very talented musician and arranger. And so he breaks down classic rock songs to their essence. What makes this song great is a long-running series that he's got on YouTube. He does, as his followers and prominence has grown, he's now getting one-on-one interviews with the likes of Sting. That one was absolutely terrific. And one of my very recent favorites is Steve Lukather, who is the founding guitarist in Toto, but he has played on, if you can think of a classic rock era hit record, Steve Lukather probably played on it. And he's a phenomenal storyteller. So pretty much anything Rick Beato puts up on YouTube is worth watching. And the Steve Lukather one is terrific.
It's of all time.
This is a bit of him talking right now.
Set up for Larry.
Like home sensei.
Yes.
I love that idea. So he just talks with some of your favorite rock stars and they break down some of the music that they've done.
Yeah, absolutely.
Oh, that's fantastic. And finally on Explain Your Likes with our friend Bob Reed, who here's the last one. The final one is, what is this final, the final like, Bob? I can't find my sheet.
That's all right. It's also from YouTube, and I like and follow these two guys who do a series called America's Untold Stories. And it's largely a lot of sort of Cold War and 60s era American stuff. Some of it goes further back in history, but each episode for like an hour or so, they will walk you through the story of some character from history or some incident in history. They've done a lot of stuff on the big political assassinations from the 60s. John F. Kennedy, his brother Robert, Martin Luther King. In recent times as well, for some reason, they're totally fixated on Alec Baldwin and his Rust manslaughter situation, and they've been going really deep that. But it's their Cold War stuff that I love. Like, for instance, they've got one episode called The Ladies of LBJ, Lyndon Baines Johnson, President of the United States, and they go deep about all the women he was carrying on with.
Oh, really?
While he was in the White House.
Yeah. Interesting, because I didn't know that he had that reputation. So I guess that's why it's America's Untold Stories. I love it.
Is.
Thank you very
and
much.
And they tell him.
Thanks, Bob. Really appreciate it. Have a good night.
You too. Cheers.
Bob Reed is principal at Broadway Strategy and Communications and also a contributor to the iHeartTalk Radio Network. And you can hear him in Toronto on Touchdowns and Fumbles with host Jerry Agar. Straight ahead, it's Much Music's Michael Williams on our segment, Mental Health on the iHeartTalk Radio Network.